Star-Lord.
Who?
Star-Lord, man. Legendary outlaw.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of Popcorn and Prosecco, where we're going to give you 30 minutes of nonstop movie talk. This week, we are going to discuss Sharknado 2, Happy Christmas, and Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm Perry Nemroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Han.
Hello. Hi.
All right, Christy, you're kicking us off with Sharknado.
Yeah, so this is actually a first for us. We don't typically review TV stuff, but guys, it's not just TV, it's Sharknado, too. The second one. So we thought it was we couldn't overlook it. So all of us did our homework. I think all of us saw the original Sharknado to get so we wouldn't be lost.
Nope. Did you not? Have you
seen it?
No, I've never seen the first Sharknado.
We'll get into that.
But Perry, you're missing this whole rich mythology, and I don't
know
if you followed Sharknado 2.
I was able to figure a lot of it out. was there really a lot of things that I missed?
No.
Okay.
This is Sharknado 2. It was born solely out of the fact that people went nuts for the first one and whether or not they saw it. And so Sharknado 2, the second one, instead of being set on the West Coast, goes to New York City, where Ian Ziering's character, or Ian, I think he says, Ian Ziering's character and Tara Reid's character are coming to New York for a press tour for the book she wrote, How to Survive a Sharknado. And he's like the big hero of the book. So they keep getting recognized on the street. Yet, when they tell people there's a Sharknado coming, and the proof they have is that their plane crashed because of a Sharknado, no one in New York believes them until it's too late, and sharks are raining from the skies and taking out Manhattan. And Citi Field, and there's lots of things that go on. Lots of natural disasters, and to keep us abreast of all that, Al Roker repeatedly shows up to explain to us the weather physics of Sharknado.
They're in a lot of this movie.
They have like 5 or 6 scenes. Yeah, it's crazy. Him and Matt Lauer
are supporting characters.
I also think that they're some of the best actors in this whole thing.
I don't think that's saying very much.
No, but I like that Matt Lauer won't say Sharknado for the first half of the movie. Like Al Roker keeps being like, it's a Sharknado, and he's like, this shark tornado, he won't say it. Which really fits with my impression of Matt Lauer, that he takes himself too seriously, and then he finally embraces it and kills a shark, so that's something.
Spoiler!
Yeah. In this movie, everyone who interacts with a shark either kills a shark or is killed by a shark, or both. So,
to be fair, some people just have their hands eaten off by sharks and are not actually killed by sharks.
That's true. So, I was very excited about this movie, not because I expected it to be good, but because when I was growing up and learning to like movies, it was a time before Netflix. And that meant that I would go to video stores and I would find the weirdest movie cover I could, and I watched movies like Piranha and April Fool's Day and all of the Critters movies, all of them. And I liked watching B terrible horror movies, and I still do. Oh, and Jack Frost. If you haven't seen Jack Frost about the Killer Snowman, go find that, because that's great. But I was excited about that for this reason, but what was annoying was that Sharknado 2 is, so self-aware of that people are just watching it for its ridiculousness that they just heap on so much stuff that it's not fun. It becomes just too aware of its own moves, and I got halfway through it. I know where my breaking point was. There's a bunch of cameos that I noticed, and then at one point we hit where Perez Hilton and Jared from Subway are the cameos, and I was like, and I'm out. We've gone too far. And then literally there's a scene where they jump sharks and say they've jumped sharks, and I'm just like, it's not cute. So I enjoyed the first half of this movie, and then I was sad.
I just feel totally stupid criticizing this movie because of what it is. I mean, really, how can you? It's not a good movie. It's bad. It's poorly written. It's a stupid story. But, isn't that the point? So I kind of just went into it knowing that I wasn't going to be able to rip apart the narrative and, the performances and all that. I kind of just took it for what it was. And, it was entertaining enough. It was silly. It was stupid. But I had fun watching it.
I don't think it's fair to say that because it's intentionally bad, we can't, criticize it. Okay, obviously this is not a movie where we're going to expect Oscar-caliber acting, but it's still a movie that was made for, a purpose, with a specific goal in mind, and I think we can judge it against that. And I think, Christy was saying that she thought that it didn't really succeed on that level because it was a little too self-aware. I would argue that the first one kind of was, too. I don't know. I saw a lot of people complaining, why watch an intentionally bad movie when you can watch movies that are, actually good or whatnot, But for me, the main appeal of Sharknado is just that, like, other people I know are watching it. Like, I watch it with my husband. I was, like, following Christy on Twitter while she was talking about it. And for me, that was the fun part. The movie itself is dumb. It's, you know,
It's an experience. It tries really, and sometimes it succeeds,
and sometimes it thinks it succeeds, but doesn't actually. And, you know, there are some moments that I was like, okay, that is actually kind of ridiculous in a hilarious way. And then there were a lot of points where I was like, okay, yeah. But, yeah, for me, the experience is just like, well, you know, other people I know are watching it. We're talking about it. We're drinking. Like, that's the fun part. The movie itself is just...
That's the best part of it. I mean, even having just come from Comic-Con, too, just hearing people talk about it there and all the hype that was going on there, it's kind of fun to be a part of it. And it's, like, it's this absurd thing that makes no sense and is totally stupid, but, like, we all embrace the stupidness together, which is what makes it such a great experience.
And there's things about it I thought were funny and, like, some things that were, like, I wasn't sure if were references. And, like, for me, the funnest part was just tweeting stupid stuff about it because, like... There's a scene in this movie where the head of the Statue of Liberty breaks off and rolls down a street, and I made a joke on Twitter that, like, we know this doesn't take place in the same cinematic universe as Planet of the Apes. And, like, stuff like that was fun because it's, like, you do feel part of a conversation. Like, I'm totally against texting in movie theaters, but, like, that's where TV comes in handy, that you can have these kind of conversations with people online. And, like, I was asking people for other references they were getting, and we had a fun time, like, talking about how technically West Side Story, because sharks versus the jet in the beginning.
The only thing that I think that this movie did really poorly that I think might have helped it if it had changed is freaking get rid of Tara Reid. She's just creepy looking.
They sidelined her for so much of it. And she's way better in this one than she was in the last one.
Ugh. I mean, she can't act. Like, when she was screaming at the beginning, I'm like, wow, you know, you should just never do that. And also, like, nothing on her face moves at all. That's really disturbing. And I said it to you in text messages. How many women in this movie have plastic surgery faces?
It's really
scary. I think every female character but the daughter had a plastic surgery face.
Well, those are funny because the daughter and the son characters have no relevance. Like, in the first movie, there's a daughter and a son character who don't come back. And also, guys, where's Nova? I like Nova from the first movie. Anyway.
Why would Nova be tagging along on a family trip to New York?
Well,
maybe Sharknado was just being logical.
Well, but Shark, in the first one, I was still, like, annoyed they ended up, like, back together at the end. Perry, to catch you up in the background, in the first Sharknado, him and Tara Reid are divorced. But through the Sharknado, her husband gets eaten, and they end up together in the end. Even though the most of the movie, Nova is flirting with him, but then she ends up with the son. It doesn't really make sense.
It's kind of like she was kind of like what Vivica A. Fox was in this movie, which is just like the woman who was inexplicably in love with Ian Ziering.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows why.
Here's what I have to say. Ian Ziering really does commit to this. And while a lot of people committed to the goofiness, like, I bought him as this guy who believes in Sharknado and believes that they need to survive it. Like, his big rousing speech is so dumb where he's like, we're all New Yorkers. But I was like, way to go, Ian Ziering. Like, I genuinely, I do want to see him in actually better movies now. Not, like, great big movies. I mean, he's actually, I heard he's 50, which is insane. He doesn't look 50.
What?
Yeah, that's what I heard. That might have been a joke. I should look that up and before I start telling the internet that.
I don't know. He did always look like he was, like, 40 when he was on 90210.
He's 50. He was born on March 30th, 1964.
That's insane. He looks really good. Oh, my God.
From, like, 90210.
He's in Expendables 4.
This is, like, the most impressive thing. Oh, my God, if he was in Expendables 4. That's the most impressive thing to me. How is he 50? Anyway.
He is a main reason that this movie works at all, though, because you can't have something so silly without something to ground it just a little bit. And, you know, he was very believable. He was very into the Sharknados, and I believed he was scared. I didn't really believe that nobody around him was listening to him when it happened already. Even not having seen the first movie, that's something that stood out to me big time.
And, like, it's also shocking to me because I know it's a low-budget movie, and that's fine. I don't tend to hold low-budget stuff against... Like, the fact that it's low-budget, I don't tend to hold against movies. But it was a bit of a bummer because... It makes so little of the movie make sense because they're still cutting away from kills because they can't afford to show it, which I just thought, cut back on some of your celebrity cameos and show me a decent kill. Like, there are kills on the subway system that don't make any sense. And then in the Go to City Fields...
That's absurd. The New York City subway would not be running in the event of a Sharknado. It shuts down when we have fucking rainstorms.
It shuts down little because ones. Someone in Manhattan sneezed. Like, ugh. Anyway.
Well, the movie also missed a major opportunity to get all the craziness before the Sharknado comes in. Like, why does all of a sudden the Sharknado just, like, pop up out of nowhere? It's like when Sandy and the hurricanes were coming, we knew about that, like, a week before. We're all flipping out, buying stuff. I mean, I don't really know the mechanics of a Sharknado, but it seemed a little weird that it just, like, fell out of the sky right when those two characters happened to be flying through it.
A plane crashes at the beginning of the movie, and everyone in New York doesn't know about it, which is insane. It's New York. Guys, just to clue everyone else in that doesn't live in New York City, when planes do anything in this city, we know about it.
It crash lands into John F. Kennedy Airport, which would be...
with sharks embedded in the sides of it.
Yeah, there's actually, like, sharks in it and, like, on it, and they kind of just, like, hand wave, like, oh, I don't know, for some reason the news reports don't mention the shark. And I'm like, they would fucking mention the shark. I don't understand.
Yeah. And it's just, like, little stupid stuff like that bugged me. And, like, Citi Field, it's snowing for no reason, which I'm convinced is just that it was snowing when they had to shoot at Citi Field, so they're like, we'll just write it into the plot.
Oh, you could totally tell. Absolutely. It's because when you look in the background, too, I think you could see people walking around in, like, winter clothes.
Yeah, and then, like, there's another part where it's supposed to be raining, but they've clearly just added that filter that makes it look like rain in the foreground. And, like, my husband's like, why is Ian's hearing waterproof? Because, like, no one is wet, even though they're running through the rain. And, like, it's just stuff like that where it was, like, really distracting when you're just, like, you know that this movie had so much attention. I wish they would have just spent a little more money to make it look just a little better. Like,
well,
I'm fine with it being dumb.
I feel like
the problem is that if it gets too much better, then it loses, like, the shitty quality. Which
and
is
then people cool. start judging it for, like, any other movie.
Well, here's a question.
It's weird because I feel like it either, you know, it works if it's so low budget and so crappy that we can all just, like, laugh about it and pretend we're better than it even though we're devoting 2 hours of our life watching it. Or it can work if it's, like, actually really well done. But there's a really wide gap in the middle where it just doesn't work at all because then it'll take itself too seriously and be, like, too good that it'll be so good that you kind of have to take it seriously but not actually good enough that you actually can take it seriously.
Well, here's my question to you guys. Can a movie on purpose be so bad it's good?
Apparently.
Look
how successful this thing was. People are watching it.
I don't know. I feel like there's been, like, so much debate about that over the shark, over, like, you know, because of Sharknado, like, even when people were tweeting, like, when I was watching it, I saw as many people complaining about other people tweeting about Sharknado as I saw people tweeting about Sharknado. I don't know. Like, I don't think that this movie, taken on its own merits, like, succeeds on really any level, except maybe, I guess, you know, Ian Ziering looks really good for 50, that level, maybe.
I think
I was saying at the beginning, like, what worked about this movie for me was just the fact that, like, this movie was marketed in such a way that, like, it convinced people to watch it, and because we were all watching it together, it was a fun communal experience. But that's, like, that's almost, like, less the movie than the marketing, I guess.
It's sort of like the World Cup, where we all get to care about this very briefly and then forget it happened.
Basically, yeah.
I think I'm
the only one that made that comparison, by the way.
I think they're definitely going to do a third, and we're going to be talking about this thing for a while.
Yes, but I think this one actually apparently did better than the last one in terms of viewers, but I think it's going to be diminishing returns pretty soon.
Also, I just want to say that this episode is brought to you by Tara Reid's Shark.
It's called Shark by Tara, Christy. Get it right. It smells like lavender-colored flowers.
That's what it says. There's a website.
There is a website. Go to TaraReid.com. We are not making this up.
We are not actually being sponsored by it, but Tara, we'll take that, so call us.
All right, so next one. Happy Christmas. Angie, this one's all you.
Yes, so the other thing, to change gears completely, one of the other movies we saw this week is Happy Christmas, the latest movie by Joe Swanberg. It's actually not new, it's on VOD, but we all really wanted to see it, and Perry really liked it and convinced us that we should review it for this episode. So here we are. And it's about a family that lives in Chicago. It's played, and the family's played by Joe Swanberg, Melanie Lynskey, and then this little kid who I think is Joe Swanberg's, like, actual child.
Yeah. He is adorable. For marketing, they sent happy Christmas cards, like, in the middle of the summer, and it was signed by his son.
Was it, like, actually signed by him? Did they actually, make a 3-year-old, work for a movie for no pay? Because that kind
of
sounds
illegal. I know, I have mixed feelings. Like, part of me is like, I want one. I love that she's getting it. Part of me is like, I want one. And then part of me is like, that's terrible. But he was so cute. I don't normally like
when I put it away. Fuck. It was so cute. It's on my Instagram. You could go look at it there.
I was really impressed, actually, because, normally little kids in movies aggravate me because I'm just like, they're there to be like, look, here's a good example. There's a commercial out right now where a guy asks his son if he wants to go for a drive in his Mercedes, and the little kid imagines himself doing adult things. He's like, I was waiting here, don't give me a ticket. And, that stuff drives me nuts. I don't think it's cute. I find it frustrating and irritating. But,
I'm going to explain the rest of the plot first. But first I'm going to say, I just hope that that kid eventually grows up and demands back wages from his dad. Because he's earned them. He is really good in the movie. Anyway, so then there's this family in Chicago, played by a kid that Christy and Perry both really like, and their parent, and Joe Swanberg, Melanie Lynskey. And then Joe Swanberg's sister, who is played by Anna Kendrick, decides to move from, they don't really specify where she's from, but she decides she wants to move to Chicago, so she stays with them in the basement for a while. And she's a fuck up. She's just, she's she seems kind of sweet and likable, but she also is just someone whose life is a little off the rails. She's just coming off of a bad breakup. She doesn't seem to have a job.
She's totally immature.
Yeah, she doesn't even seem to be really looking for a job. She's one of those, she's the female equivalent of one of those man children that we see in indie movies all the time. And it's just about what happens when she shows up. And because this is a Joe Swanberg movie, it's not the kind of thing with rich melodrama and things are tears are shed and things are thrown and there are screaming matches and it's not that kind of thing. It's very low key, and that's what I loved about it. I don't know if this was shot in his actual house, but it kind of feels like it was.
He told me. I think that was his house. I interviewed him a while back, and I think he said that was his house. And I really should go look back at that interview before talking about it.
That was the thing that I loved the most about this movie, was just it just really feels like you're just there. It feels like you actually are in this other person's house,
Yeah.
It really, you can tell that it's, if it's not his house and it's a set, then it's a really, really, really well done one, because it really does just the way that things are a little bit messy or a little bit off kilter or things don't quite match. It just really felt like a house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt really lived in. And I feel like this movie kind of, because Christmas is a plot point in a lot of movies, but I feel like this one did a better job than most movies I've seen of dealing with Christmas the way I deal with Christmas, which is that it's there, it's something, it's not the be-all, end-all thing, it's not the moment that you run to, someone's house and make a sweeping declaration of love. And it, so then, to me, this movie felt more like Christmas than most Christmas
movies. It's big Love Actually out of nowhere.
I hate that scene in Love Actually.
I agree with you that it feels like a lived-in movie, and I think part of that is that little Jude Swanson, he's 2 years old in the movie, and he's acting with his real dad, and, he's actually having people trying to, curry favor with him. There's one part where Anna Kendrick's trying to play with him, and he's, shutting her down. He doesn't really want to play with her, and, he's not a kid acting. He's just playing, and it's, it gives it this sense of, genuinity? That's not a word. This genuineness. Yeah, there you go. That's a word. Guys, it's been a long week, and at the end of the week, I lose words, so apologies, everyone. But yeah, it has a sense of authenticity that then the actors have to live up to, and you have Mark Webber playing, the love interest for Anna Kendrick, and of course he is. If Mark Webber's in a movie, obviously he's the nice guy love interest of the quirky girl.
Obviously he's the nice guy that falls in love with the train wreck. See, also save the day. I'm starting to get really concerned about his, cinematic taste in women, you guys.
Call.
Poor Mark Webber.
That's what he does. But yeah, it was actually, I really liked this. And what surprised me was, because it's a Joe Swanson movie and he's in it, I kind of assumed he would be the main character or a part of the central focus. But it's mostly actually about the Anna Kendrick character and her sister-in-law, played by Melanie Lynskey, and how they interact and inspire each other. And then you have Lena Dunham coming in as Anna Kendrick's friend. And they just have, their scenes together were just wonderful. And it's just them improvising about writing an erotic book, 50 Shades of Grey, but I think set in a fairy tale world.
I think it's a medieval erotic romance type.
Yeah,
thing.
That's Anna what
Kendrick,
it was.
Anna Kendrick's character convinces Melanie Lynskey's character, who is an aspiring novelist. Oh, she's actually a novelist. She's had a book published, and she convinces her to write
this
book.
She just can't write another one because of taking care of the family and all that stuff.
Because
he's really busy making films, so he's off all day. She has to take care of the kids, so he does a nice thing for her and lets her use his office space before they go into pre-pro or something, and that's where she writes for a while.
That was actually one of my favorite scenes in the movie, is when Melanie Lynskey is hanging out with Anna Kendrick, and then Anna Kendrick's friend, played by Lena Dunham, and Melanie Lynskey is sort of like, they kind of, I guess, inadvertently put her in this position of having to defend the fact that she's a stay-at-home mom. It, like, it becomes this, like, weird...
And they don't like, mean kind of, to.
No, it's in...
It's just a casual conversation.
Like, comfortable back and forth about, like, you know, like, feminism versus, like, you know, like your personal choices and, like, you know... I don't know. It's hard to explain. And, like, one of the things...
Well, she sits down for a beer with them, and they say something. She talks about being a stay-at-home mom, and then she says she feels like... I don't know if she says the phrase bad feminist, but she feels like that might be a conflict. And neither of them allow
She's having trouble reconciling the fact that, like, you know, in theory, she's a feminist, and she believes that, like, you know, women's careers are just as important as men's, and et cetera, et cetera. And yet she finds herself in this position where, without necessarily, like, planning for it, she wound up being, like, a stay-at-home mom who takes care of the kids so her husband can go chase his, you know, careers, chase his dreams.
That's the best thing about every single aspect of this movie, is that nothing is black and white. They don't just believe in one thing and, like, one character. It's like, even Mark Webber, he's not just the good guy, he's also, like, a drug dealer, and that's not cool. Everyone just has a good side and a bad side to them, and seeing them all interact and seeing, like, their opinions change, it all happens in a really natural, fluid manner that, you know, really mimics real life, because, like you said before, we don't have these Christmas parties that we go to and declare love for someone there. It's like all in flux all the time, and you feel that all throughout this movie. And when
I kind of want that to happen this Christmas, just so we all feel like jerks. Like, we'll go to some big industry party and someone will propose or something.
Oh God.
I mean, I know that there are people to whom that happens. I'm not one of those people. I don't want to be one of those people. I've never been one of those people, and I don't ever plan to be one of those people. Andrew Lincoln is never going to show up at my house with the cards that says how much he loves me, even though I'm married to his best friend, and I am so okay with that. I'm glad he's getting eaten by zombies right now, by the way. I'm still pissed at him about that storyline, but that's a different thing.
Well, I think also we should point out that we're making this, it is a small movie, but it's a really fun movie. Like, it's just kind of like a very sweet and joyful and upbeat movie that moves really quickly. I think it's only like 88 minutes or something.
Yeah,
it's really
short.
I was
genuinely sad when this movie came to an end. Like, there's this one last scene where they're walking out of a room and you kind of see the frame closing in black around them. And like, when it clicked in my head, then I'm like, oh shit, I know what's happening now. Don't do it. I just want a little more. Don't end it. And then all of a sudden, boop, and they were gone.
Oh, which we should say, like all great Marvel movies, this actually does have an after the credits scene. So if you rent it on your
which I didn't watch.
Yeah.
I'm so bad, and my link doesn't work anymore.
Oh. It was funny because I rented it through Amazon Prime. It was only $6.99. It's $6.99 whether you pick standard def or high def, so you should totally do this. And, at the end, I kind of left it on because I liked the song that was playing, which normally I don't. I'll just switch over to something else, but I left it on, and then, like, I heard people talking, and I came back into the room, and I was like, oh, there's another scene! And it's not essential to the understanding of the movie at all. It's just more fun times with the characters.
It's not essential to the understanding of, like, the plot or anything, but it is like, a scene that really gets at, like, what makes this movie so charming, which is just that it's, like, three characters just kind of, like, sitting around, goofing off, and it feels very, like, warm and lived in and natural, and it's just, like, a really nice moment. It's also, like, really hilarious because they're, like, getting dirty because they're talking about the erotic novel she's writing.
Yeah.
So it just gets, like, really, like, silly and goofy and kind of perverted and,
You guys have to tell me what that scene is after.
No problem.
I'm very curious.
I mean, I think it's not, like, something that you can really spoil, so I think I just explained
it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I still want to watch it.
You totally should. It's lovely.
I also want to watch this movie again. Like, really.
Actually the great thing about Amazon Prime. The rental's, like, 30 days. So, like, I finished it, and it was like, you now have 29 days and 23 hours or something like that to watch this again. I was like, oh, I probably will.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like if you like these kinds of movies and you liked, like, Drinking Buddies, which was his last movie, which also had Anna Kendrick in it, then you're gonna like this one. It's a little bit warmer and, like, sweeter than Drinking Buddies was, but, you know, it's in the same vein, like, very, like, naturalistic and, like, kind of, like, low key and, like, relaxed.
So it sounds like we all think this is worth a VOD rental.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
All right.
So in that case, we're moving on to the big one of the week, which is Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm going to apologize at the beginning because I don't even know how to begin describing this thing. So we start with a little Peter Quill, and his parents die, and he gets, like, zapped up into a spaceship, and then he lives out in space basically stealing stuff and then selling it for money, so that's kind of how he makes his existence. And at a point, he steals something, but he doesn't really know what it is, and all these other people, Ronan the Accuser's thugs, they come after him because they want it, but Peter doesn't know why. And so they try to steal it, and then another... Thanos' daughter...
Oh, my God. You're making it sound like a fairy tale.
Whatever. Everyone wants this thing, so they try to steal this thing from him. The orb, which has... I'm not going to spoil that.
It has mystical powers.
Okay, thank you. So they try to steal this orb from them, and then, like, the police force there gets mad, so they arrest everyone who's trying to steal it, which is Peter, Quill, Gamora, Groot, and Rocket, and they all go to prison, and that's where they meet Drax, and they all escape together and decide to fight together and make sure that this orb with mystical powers does not get into the wrong hands. What? Seriously, yeah.
No, that was pretty solid. It's just funny because, like, you were describing it, and I never would have thought of it as a fairy tale before, but then, like, the way you were describing it, I was like, this totally sounds like a fairy tale.
Luckily, I didn't just start describing, like, that it was a talking raccoon and she has green skin. Then it might have really sounded like a crazy fairy tale.
And then they climb a beanstalk. That part doesn't happen, but it wouldn't be that far. Actually, no! They climb Groot! They do!
Well, Rocket climbs Groot. No, they all climb Groot.
They all take turns climbing up. Mind blown.
Well, anyway, I freaking love this movie. It's not just my favorite. It's my favorite Marvel movie. It's definitely my favorite movie of the summer, and I actually think this might be my favorite movie of the year over Snowpiercer. I think Snowpiercer is the better movie, but I had so much more fun watching this one, and this is probably one of the first movies that I've walked out of in a really long time that if it happened to have been screening, like, the second after I left, I would have gone right back in and watched it again, without a doubt. I loved it.
I love this movie, too. I mean, it's the first time that you really see, like, Marvel take a risk, I think, you know, since the really early days when just the idea of, like, them trying to lead up to the Avengers 6 movies later seemed like a risk. It feels like they really are exploring, like, a different corner of the Marvel universe, which I know is the idea, but, you know, you still kind of felt like, well, it's a Marvel movie, like, how different can it be? And, you know, let's be fair, it still follows, like, the Marvel format, like, it's still, like, a superhero origin story. It's about how this team gets together, and they have to save the world, and it still ends in, like, an epic showdown battle in which a lot of buildings get destroyed, because, again, it's still a modern superhero movie, but it feels
not
very...
Not really, though. That was one thing that stood out to me, is that the ending was different. Like, that climax was absolutely nothing like the massive destruction in, like, Man of Steel and Transformers, where cities are just, like, completely crumbling. There was something much more intimate about the way this movie ends.
Can I say something about the city being destroyed at the end? They evacuate the city as soon as they find out there's a threat.
That's a good point.
Because they never do that in movies, and you guys remember
they didn't evacuate New York and Sharknado.
No, they did not. Nobody ever evacuates shit in these movies, and you're always just like, what the fuck? Like, why would you not evacuate the second? Anyway, so I was really, really grateful that as soon as the people in this, you know, future other planet city find out, like, oh, something horrible is about to happen here, like, the second they find out, they're like, everyone, let's evacuate the city. And I was like, yes, you guys deserve to live. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit different, I guess. Like, it does, like, it is the only one that I've, it is the only superhero movie climax I've seen that includes a one-sided dance-off. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler. You'll see what I mean. But I don't know. It still ends in, like, oh, epic destruction and big showdown. I don't know.
One thing I've got to say, I think, for me, the part of this movie that works the best is Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt is just amazing. He's funny, and he's a totally believable action hero, and he's got that kind of devil-may-care attitude that's like Indiana Jones or Mal from Firefly/Serenity. Like, it's sexy. It's fun. Like, I mean, I just wanted to see more and more of Star-Lord, and especially because, like, no one treats him with any respect. So, like,
yeah.
it's just,
it's wonderful. That was one of the things that was kind of funny about it. Like, because, like, I think there's a moment in the trailers where he's like, you know, I'm Star-Lord. And then Korath, who's been, like, you know, who's, like, been after him, is just, like, puts his gun down. He's like, who? And then he gets, like, really sad.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry, though. It goes, it's Groot. I've thought about this a lot since we walked out. It's Groot, Drax, Rocket, Peter Quill, Gamora.
Groot is really the heart of the movie. Like, Groot is the one that, like, you know, everyone has their moments, but Groot is the one that makes you, like...
The first thing I did when I left this movie is I came home and I ordered one of those little Funko Pops of Groot, because greatest character I've seen in the theater all year. It melted my heart. I like him better than Toothless. Holy shit. I'm all for Groot. I want a Groot solo movie.
I like Groot, but I feel like Groot is just, like, a few shades away from Iron Giant, so it's just, like, he's lovely.
Is that a bad thing? Did you not like Iron Giant?
No, it's not a bad thing. It's just that, like, I don't know. It's fine, but, like, if I were going to rank which my favorite were, like, Star-Lord would be number one. He was so much fun to watch, and, like, he did a bunch of different things that were exciting. Groot's funny, but he's kind of one-note.
He's not one-note. That's the special thing about him, is he's not one-note. He only says the same thing over and over, but every single time he says it, like, you kind of see what he means, you know?
He's like Chewbacca.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And, like, Rocket, I think, is kind of too much of a dick for me to be super on board with. Like, he's fun, you know, but he would not be my...
I thought he was going to be my favorite. That's why he went down the list. Because I'm like, you can't be my favorite because you're so mean.
I liked Rocket. For me, I mean, okay, so he's not my favorite, but for me, the most pleasant surprise was Dave Bautista as Drax the Destroyer.
How funny is
he? I don't follow wrestling, but just because, like, but I guess just because I was like, oh, you know, he's not an actor, he's a wrestler. Like, I was like, you know.
His lines hit better than a lot of the others, and his timing was so, I mean, obviously it could have been editing.
He's very good.
It could have been editing, but, like, his delivery and the timing was just so spot on that almost everything he said in this movie was really freaking funny, or actually touching as we got towards the end.
I do wish Gamora had more to do. I felt like there's Gamora and Nebula in this movie, and they don't get a lot.
Gamora is sort of like, if, you know, I guess behind Star-Lord, she's the second lead with, like, the most story behind her, but the story is not very interesting or well done.
It's not clear. That would have been much more interesting if I had a better sense of how she felt about her upbringing and, like, all these people that she's associated with.
Hear her say, like, oh, you know, like, I hated growing up surrounded by my enemies, but you never really, like, see, like, what does that mean to her? Like, you know, how did she survive that? Like, you never, it kind of, like, the story was so half-assed, I felt like, that it was almost just like, well, if you were going to half-ass it that much, like, why did you even bother?
It also feels like a foil to Peter's story, because, like, they both talk about growing up in a situation where you're surrounded by people that could have killed you. And, like, it's interesting, but it's, like, they don't give her a lot to do. And then later in the movie, when they need somebody to say things exposition-wise, like, we're never going to make it, or, like, the thing is closing, they keep giving those lines to Gamora, which I felt was really infuriating, because she's the only girl, and I felt like the girl thing to be the downer, going, like, we're never going to make it.
Well,
like,
it was one of her lines that made me laugh out loud the most, when they're talking about Footloose.
Don't give it away, but
she turns to him, and she says something, and it's, like, it's got the word butt in it, and I don't know, I'm just immature, and I just sat there for, like, 10 minutes after doing that thing where I, like,
Zoe Saldana is great. I wish they had given her more to do. And, like, Karen Gillan, like, I'm coming from Doctor Who on this. Karen Gillan is really wonderful. But, again, they don't give her much to do in this.
There's nothing to her at all. Yeah, she's just very one note. She's got, like, her mindset on that, and that's it.
And I'm also unclear. I know she has robot pieces, and it's like, I don't understand. She's an android or whatever, and maybe that's why she doesn't have a lot of emotions. Like,
I wish they had explained why she was that way. I wish they would have explained a little more of the family tree.
That's what I mean by, like, it almost felt like if you were gonna just, like, not put any effort into it and just, like, just don't even bother. Like,
it almost felt like,
well, then again, you could look at it like maybe they're setting up Karen Gillan for a bigger role in the next movie, and
I'm sure that they are, because both of them are, you know, the adoptive daughters of Thanos, and he's rumored
to
be
set up this Loki Thor relationship,
etc. Within the context of this movie, I thought that subplot was just really given short shrift. I felt like they could have done a much more effective job of, you know, like, for example, you get a really good sense of, like, who Rocket is and where he came from and, like, you know, the, like, how damaged he is without having this, like, whole extraneous subplot with involving, like, other characters and, like, the explanations. Like, that, to me, was a much more effective bit of characterization.
You know, the thing with her, I know neither of you watches, but it's making me think of what they did on Penny Dreadful with the villain for season two, because the villain for season two, she was in season one, but only, like, in a couple random scenes, and you didn't really realize where it was going until they announced it, and then I'm like, oh shit, like, because I know all that about, well, not very much, but because I know a little bit about her now, well, I can't believe what she could be capable of next season, and
that's I think that's Nebula's setup, yeah, like, Nebula's clearly set up for the future of the franchise, like, they're not subtle about that, but it's like, she's so barely in this one that it's just, I'm not exactly excited.
You know what, like, I get what Perry's saying, but you know what, no, I refuse to, like, judge how this movie turned out, like, in the context of movies that I haven't seen yet, like, I feel like, you know what, you're still a fucking movie. You should stand on your own merits. And it does. Like, I feel like we're really harping
on this one
subplot.
It's a really fucking fun movie. I just wanted to point out that, like,
just this one subplot that I thought was that I thought was just, like, not given its full due. That's all.
There's a lot of great characterizations, and there's some smaller characters, like Glenn Close has a character and John C. Reilly has a character, and they're not important characters, but we get enough time with them that we understand how they function in the plot, we understand them as characters, but I was annoyed that Nebula and Gamora both feel short shrifted in this, where it feels like just too much from their story was cut or condensed in a way that, like, I don't feel like we get to know very much about them. And I do think that they're setting it up for a future thing. I think that they're trying to set up, like, get it? It's like Thor and Loki. They both want to impress
Thanos. But I don't fucking care, though. Like, be good on your own merits in this movie.
No, totally.
Clearly I noticed that, but it in no way took away from this experience whatsoever.
No, I feel like let's move on from discussing this one subplot, which is, I feel like we're really blowing it up. It's not even that big a part of the movie.
No, it's just a question of, like, it is a fault in this otherwise really fun, really exciting movie that moves at a great clip.
It's a freaking stunning movie, too. This movie is gorgeous. You could freeze frame almost any single thing and, like, end up with great wall art.
Yeah, well, I was about to say those exact same words. To me, the best thing about this movie is just how much personality it has. Like, it's brimming with personality. It doesn't feel like other things you've seen. The characters don't feel like other characters you've seen. They fit into archetypes, but they fill them in with enough details that, like, you understand, like, who this character is. Like, you know.
I really hope that the success of this influences what they're doing with Ant-Man, because I feel like Ant-Man could have been coming in this direction just a little bit.
It might be a little late for that.
I'm sure it's too late for it, but, like, I hope they feel like shit for doing what they did to Ant-Man, because if they had gone and, like, taken a risk and done something like this, we could have ended up with another great, and not, like, a Guardians copy, even. Like, it would have been an Edgar Wright film. It would have been like, holy shit, look at this Marvel movie that's completely different and is, like, nothing we've ever seen before. That's kind of, like, why I'm flipping out right now. It's because, you know, at this point, I loved Captain America, but I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen a lot of that over and over.
I felt like this movie did the best job out of the Marvel movies of being a movie that feels, like, very distinctive and yet still on brand. Like, I feel like it's a tough balance that a lot of the movies have had trouble figuring out, where, like, either they are too, like, beholden to the Marvel brand and, like, to, like, fitting into the Marvel universe, so it doesn't really feel that unusual, you know, but it doesn't feel so unique and strange that you are like, there's no way this is part of the same universe as the Avengers. Like,
and also because of the way the action escalates and how quick, like, the movie takes place over a very short period of time once you leap from him being a child to present day. It's only two hours long,
which is probably important to point out, which is unusual.
That's true, too, but that's not what I mean. What I mean is, like, from the first time where Peter encounters the orb in the second sequence to the end of the movie, it's maybe, like, 2 or 3 days' time, and so it makes sense that, like, none of the other Marvel characters would get involved in this plot line, which is something that they now have to think about.
Right. Well, it's also happening really far away from them and has nothing to do with any of them, and I felt kind of fine about that. Yeah. I wish that, like, some more of the Marvel movies would stop trying. So, like, the Easter eggs are cute when we get them, but I feel like some of the movies try a little too hard to, like,
I don't know.
We have to reference the other movies, so I like that this one didn't.
All right, so we should wrap this one up, but I'll just go first. I love this movie. I'm pretty comfortable with saying this is my favorite movie of the year at this point. So I am obsessed with it. I am definitely going to go see it again very soon. I highly recommend going.
I wouldn't say it's my favorite movie of the year, but it's definitely one of my favorite Marvel movies. Definitely one of my favorite, like, mainstream superhero movies, really. Like, it, like I said, it's just, it's got so much, like, more life and personality and more of a sense of humor than most of them. And Chris Pratt is going to be a huge, huge star, and I could not be happier about it.
Agreed. Also, I just want to throw this out there because we didn't mention it. Chris Pratt is described as having pelvic sorcery in this movie, and that's a real thing.
And he does, and it is a fact.
It is a fact. I completely agree. He's going to blow up. He's going to be huge. This movie is wonderful. It's really funny, and you should absolutely, absolutely see it in theaters.
All right. So that is it for this week. Thank you guys so much for watching. You can catch us all over the place, obviously on YouTube, where you're watching it right now. Watch also on iTunes. You have audio and video over there, so check it out, listen, and please give us reviews and, you know, those stars, ratings, all that good stuff. We're also at popcornprosecco.com, and Twitter, our handle is popcornprosecco, and you could find all three of us on the internet as well. Angie, where can everybody read your work?
You can read my work at slashfilm.com, and you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko, and I write a lot for Cinema Blend. To keep up with the highlights of my stuff, go to decadentcriminals.com. That's my personal blog.
And I'm on Twitter at pnemiroff, and you can also find my work at Collider. And I'm also going to plug this because, Angie, I just cut our Walking Dead Escape video, and it's pretty freaking awesome. So go check me and Angie running around Petco Park like lunatics at IO9. But, yeah, enjoy
Spoiler
that.
Alert. Batman is involved.
Seriously, and he's pretty good.
Yeah, look for that in the comment underneath the.
Oh, yeah, we'll put it there too. But thank you guys so much for watching, and we can't wait to see you next. Blah, blah, blah. We can't wait to see you next week. Fuck me.
Hey, take those headphones off right now.